Welcome to the Natural Allergy Treatment Podcast. I'm your host, Jess, and joining me for our first episode of the new year, I have our Melbourne PAT practitioner, Lila DiQuinzio. Hi, Lila.
Hello.
We're part of Health and Wellness Australia and Auckland, who are a team of naturopaths around Australia and New Zealand that specialise in a natural allergy treatment called Positive Association Technique, or PAT. Lila is a degree-qualified naturopath with over 12 years of experience, and she provides PAT from the multimodality clinic she co-founded in Northcote, Melbourne, named Azara Health. She has also been featured in Body and Soul, I Quit Sugar, and Fashion Journal. So today we're going to be talking all about sugar, including the connection between allergies and sugar, as well as food cravings. As in the new year, many of us are keen to clean up our diets after eating and drinking lots of rich and sugary foods. But that can be easier said than done, right?
Definitely, yeah. We all know sugar is bad for us, but when that rich truffle mud cake's in front of us, it's hard to remember why. So it basically comes down to two major mechanisms, immunity and inflammation.
So how exactly does sugar impact our health, especially for those of us who are atopic or prone to allergies?
So unfortunately, allergies have both this immunity and inflammation pathways in common. Allergic conditions like dermatitis, eczema, hay fever, and asthma are due to an immune system that's lost its way, overproduced histamine, and created an inflammatory cascade. So we've got lots of studies that show us that Western diets containing high levels of sugar, processed foods and fat contribute to immune dysfunction and can tip the balance in favour of the Th2 inflammatory pathway, which is the one that can lead to allergies. So on the flip side, the protective diets are those that contain good fats, fibre, antioxidants and minimal sugar, like the whole food Mediterranean diet. So there are more specific studies as well, which link sugar and allergic conditions. One showed that drinking sweet drinks, so being those that contain added sugars, in kids as young as 2 years old was associated with a higher incidence of food allergies, eczema, and hay fever. And another study showed high sugar diets specifically increasing inflammatory cells in the skin, so likely contributing to that skin thickness that we can see in allergic dermatitis a lot of the time. Higher sugar intake has also been linked with a higher incidence of asthmatic symptoms due to increased allergy markers, lowered immunoprotective factors, and therefore an increased susceptibility of the immunity of the airways to allergic inflammation. And then outside of their influence on allergies, the impact of dietary sugars and processed foods on our health is so well documented, showing their effect on inflammation, oxidative stress, alteration of the gut microbiome, gut permeability, and reduced immune function. So dangerously excessive sugar intake or high carb intake can actually end up as insulin resistance, which is a pre-diabetic condition, which can contribute to metabolic disease, incorporating weight gain, cholesterol imbalance, and diabetes, as well as contributing to polycystic ovarian syndrome, PCOS or PCOS, acne, and candida. So there are many, many reasons to learn about blood sugar management for so many aspects of well-being.
And can we also have an intolerance or sensitivity to sugar?
Yeah, so sugars and starches are actually one of the more common PAT treatments that we do in the clinic. So reactions to sugars and starches in foods can contribute to a variety of symptoms and skin and digestive issues in particular. So this includes all naturally occurring sugars in foods as well, such as lactose in milk and starches in potatoes and rice, anything with a carbohydrate component. Many listeners might have also heard of FODMAPs, which are essentially sugars that can ferment in our gut and can cause issues for sensitive people. So we usually need to address sugars and starches first when we're working with multiple food sensitivities, particularly to milk and grain products. And interestingly, sugar cravings can actually be a sign that you might have an intolerance or sensitivity to sugar.
So if sugar causes all this havoc in our bodies, why do we tend to crave it? Is it psychological or biological?
Yeah, so on a very basic level, we crave sugar for energy. When the blood sugar drops, fatigue, lack of motivation, irritability, the brain fog all set in, and the body receives this signal that we need a new hit of sugar to keep going. So the best way to counteract this is to aim for stable blood sugar levels, so avoiding the spike and then the inevitable crash. And that is partly why sugar becomes addictive, so we can unknowingly create this biochemical requirement for it. And there have been also studies on the addictive nature of sugar, which have shown that there are similarities in both behavior and brain changes when we compare addictive drugs and sugar. So sugar triggers the body to release opioids and dopamine, which are two brain chemicals involved in making us feel good. So when they drop, so does the good feeling, and then we're left wanting another dose. Another big reason why we can't stop thinking about the sweets is candida. So candida is this naturally occurring species of yeast, which naturally inhabits our bodies, but at low levels. And when it overgrows, we call it an opportunistic infection. So one that will gladly take up room if given the chance by an imbalanced microbiome. Other gut microbiome disruptions, like the presence of parasites, can also lead to sugar cravings. So there can be lots of reasons why there's a disruption in the microbiome favoring a candida bloom. Some of these would include when we have a diet that's more consistently high in sugar, which would be inclusive of sweets, starches, carbs, and also alcohol. Also when we're stressed or have an infection or poor immunity or even antibiotic use. So because candida thrives in an oxygenated environment, it particularly loves to grow in exposed parts of the body, such as the vagina, which we call thrush, or mouth, being oral thrush, but can also commonly be found in the colon or small intestine, which we call small intestinal fungal overgrowth, or SIFO. So if you've ever had a significant overgrowth of candida, you will understand all too well the havoc that it can wreak. Major fatigue, brain fog, mood swings, gut symptoms like bloating or stool changes, and or local symptoms like itching and discharge. And some might say the most annoying symptom of all is irresistible sugar cravings. And they're annoying not just because the sugar cravings feel so uncontrollable, but because the cruel irony is that candida make you have them. So candida really thrives on sugar and it wants to be fed, and that really makes avoiding sugar difficult, but also necessary and best done alongside the help of a practitioner like a naturopath who can treat the overgrowth while you're avoiding the sugar. Getting on top of the candida overgrowth properly is really key to targeting the symptoms and also preventing them from returning.
So there really are some biological processes underlying these cravings, which is somewhat comforting. But we've also had many clients over the years tell us that they struggle with not only sugar cravings, but also often crave the foods they know they react to. So what's that all about?
So the addictive nature of some foods can be why we can sometimes crave the foods that we're intolerant to. If you've ever experienced a reaction to something and you know you should stay away, but at times it's all you can think about, part of this is often because psychologically we tend to want what we can't have, but there might also be a physiological basis to it as well. So some foods like dairy and gluten actually contain compounds called casomorphines and gliadorphins, tricky word, known to trigger an opioid response in the brain, which is linked with reward and addiction. So because that makes us feel so great, removing them from the diet can sometimes create this withdrawal effect and leave the body craving more, which is why it's so tempting to polish off that cheese board in front of you. And interestingly, one study even suggested that this might be the reason why so many people with celiac disease, which is a known immune response to gluten, don't actually experience symptoms. So they're theorizing that it's possible that it's this opioid effect that could be masking the harmful effects of gluten. But it is important to remember that even though it feels like your body is calling for these foods that you react to, it's really best not to heed the call, because eating foods which cause inflammation can eventually damage these little protrusions on the surface of the gut called villi, which would reduce our absorption of nutrients and also increase our risk of leaky gut and worsen food intolerances.
And can this inflammatory response also contribute to more cravings?
Yeah, so there have been studies that show this link between allergies and blood sugar dysregulation, with food allergies shown to increase the risk of diabetes. Airborne allergies and allergic asthma have also been linked to obesity through this mechanism through which insulin resistance develops. So there's a link there. And one theory is that when we're exposed to allergens like dust or pollen, the immune system releases histamine. Histamine is this compound that's responsible for triggering the inflammation, which leads to all the symptoms that you feel, like the redness, the swelling, phlegm, and the heat. That inflammation increases cortisol levels, a stress hormone, which triggers the liver to release glycogen stores as sugar into the bloodstream. So this whole mechanism is designed to give us more energy to help us deal with the stress, which can be really good short term, but chronic stress can then contribute to more longer term blood sugar imbalances like insulin resistance and these blood glucose spikes, and therefore more sugar cravings.
And this may actually explain why so many of our clients struggle with sugar cravings and often notice that they shift when we address sugar and their other triggers with PAT. So we all know that we need to manage our sugar intake, but how do we go about that when dealing with these sugar cravings?
Yeah, good question. So as naturopaths, we've got lots of different tools in our belt for addressing sugar cravings. The most sustainable ones are the healthy dietary hacks, which set you up for really balanced blood sugar levels. And that has in turn a beneficial effect on a whole range of different health aspects like energy, moods, metabolic health, skin, hormones, gut health, and weight balance. So there's been research using continuous glucose monitors to measure daily glucose patterns that tell us that the spikes in the glucose have even greater implications on health than a higher but steady level of glucose. So this is a really important reason why maintaining stable blood sugar is a priority for health, as well as minimizing the sugar cravings.
So when it comes to stabilizing blood sugar and reducing cravings, could you start with some of those dietary hacks you mentioned?
Yeah. Okay. So firstly, the important thing is to focus on the balance of your meal and even the order that you're consuming the foods. So when we're eating the carbohydrates, combine them with a protein, fiber, and good fats to help slow the absorption of the sugar into the bloodstream. Just like how we know we shouldn't drink alcohol on an empty stomach, we can start to think of sweets in the same way. One of the best ways to mitigate a blood sugar spike is to eat your food groups in the right order, starting with your vegetable fibers, then proteins and fats, and then the sugars and starches last. So, for example, starting with a salad is always a really good way to begin, then going for your meat or eggs, and then the breads or potatoes, and always dessert last. So we're also looking for snacks to be protein and good fat based to help carry that nice stable blood sugar level in between the meals. So avoiding having sugar as a snack in between meals is really one of the best things you can do. So if you are wanting to have sugar in between meals, you want to make sure that it's following a high protein or good fat snack as well, like some nuts or nut butter or tuna or boiled egg or even some avocado toast before the sweets. Another really good tip is following along these lines, but making sure that we're doing that at breakfast. So starting with a savory breakfast is one of the best things you can do. When we're breaking our overnight fast, the body's at its most sensitive to glucose, and anything eaten then is absorbed into the bloodstream really quickly. So that means that sugars eaten in the morning can lead to the biggest blood sugar spike in the day. And that can really set you up for this wild roller coaster of energy and mood swings. So a savory breakfast based around proteins and or good fats is the best way to set up your blood sugar for a balanced day. So you might be thinking of eggs, even meat. You could do leftovers in the morning if it's like meat or fish or tofu. Nuts and seeds, like maybe you have a really high density granola with nuts and seeds, or full fat yogurt. Protein powder can be great, cheese, avocado, or nut butter. Carbs can accompany this, but they're not supposed to be the main event. So we're trying to avoid just having like a very sugary or carbohydrate heavy cereal or just a pastry. And then some carbs are definitely better than others. So you want to choose sourdough or wholemeal or seed breads or steel cut oats. If you do want something sweet, whole fruit is the best option, especially in the morning, because it contains the fiber to slow that absorption of sugar into the bloodstream. But whatever sweet treat you choose, just make sure you eat it after your protein and good fats. And then in very last place comes coffee. So even though it might be nice to start the day with that coffee, if you're aiming for balanced blood sugar levels, drinking your coffee about 30 minutes after your meal is a better way to reduce that glucose spike. So another great tip is to begin your meal with some vinegar. So there's lots of emerging research lately on vinegar showing that the acetic acid in it helps us digest carbohydrates more slowly. So it puts the brakes on that entry of sugar into the bloodstream and therefore helps to reduce that glucose spike. So this would be looking like drinking a tablespoon of vinegar diluted in a glass of water before your meals. That's all it needs to make a really big impact on the blood sugar levels. So you can start with a teaspoon and slowly build up, but the dilution in water is really important to protect our teeth. And you can even use a straw if you want to. And then if drinking vinegar feels a bit too cringe for you, then having it as a salad dressing at the start of your meal ticks all the boxes, because remember, eating the vegetables as fiber first is one of the best hacks as well. And then, you know, to sweeten this deal even further, apple cider vinegar actually has some good studies on it to show it can help reduce cholesterol and encourage weight loss, assist with that PCOS, and it also helps support digestion. And then another big one is just staying hydrated. So adequate water intake really helps support energy levels, stress management, and stable blood glucose. So you want to aim for 2 liters a day, and that can even include your non-caffeinated herbal teas if you want.
Is there anything we can also do outside of our diet to help curb cravings as well?
Yeah, so there's really good research on exercise after eating. So that old adage of a stroll after lunch really does hold up. The studies show at least a 10 to 20 minute walk after meals significantly reduced blood sugar levels compared to walking at other times of the day. So doing it after meals is the significant thing. So it doesn't have to be walking. You could do any type of exercise. You could have a dance or lift some weights or do some squats or yoga, whatever suits you. And then quality sleep is a really big one as well. So chronic sleep loss has been linked to poor blood sugar regulation and is known as a risk factor for insulin resistance, weight gain, and type 2 diabetes. And it works the other way too. So we know that when we crave sugar in the evenings, it's often because we're just tired. So a lot of the time we're fighting this, like our teenage selves, not wanting to go to bed. But if we actually embrace the fatigue rather than fighting it and just do something really low key, maybe read a book and go to bed early, a lot of the time we can find that having that earlier sleep a few nights in a row, that evening fatigue, and then the sugar cravings in the evening can really reduce. What else? So managing stress is a really important one for so many different reasons. You've probably experienced the craving of comfort foods in stressful times, and we're much more likely to reach for the sweet things when we're under pressure or upset. So stress also increases blood glucose by increasing cortisol, which causes that liver to release the stored glycogen as sugar into the bloodstream. So when that spike crashes, we can crave sugar too. So carving out some time for mindfulness is a really nice way to help manage stress. Even if it's just a few minutes of deep breathing, it can really make a big difference to cortisol levels. And that brings us to eating mindfully, because doing that sort of deep breathing before you eat is a really nice way to help support digestion and your blood sugar levels too. But when you do eat something sweet, make sure that you savor it. So consuming mindfully with full awareness allows it to be more satisfying, and then we often need less to hit the spot, as opposed to just popping in row after row of chocolate without even thinking about it and allowing the taste buds to take over. So just really slowing down can be helpful too. And then out of sight, out of mind. So put simply, don't buy the refined sugar when it's not in the house. You're more likely to turn to your alternatives like fruit or maybe some homemade cookies or dark chocolate, or even doing something instead of eating something.
That out of sight, out of mind has to be the best one for me by far. As soon as there's chocolate in the house, the temptation is there. So that's a good one.
I'm the same.
And can you also provide extra support in a naturopathic consultation if someone is still struggling to get these cravings under control?
Yeah, definitely. So all these dietary approaches mentioned are really the foundation of minimizing your sugar cravings. But if you feel like you're already doing these and you're still craving sugar, or if you're finding it really hard to make those changes, then a naturopath can definitely help you to look at some other approaches and supportive options. So often we start with blood testing so we can really see what's going on there, like fasting insulin, fasting glucose, HbA1c can all be helpful to just get a picture of where supplements and dietary changes might be most beneficial. And then we've also got other testing options available. So really comprehensive functional testing like stool tests can help give us insights into the impact of our diet and gut health on cravings and allergies and microbiome balance and overall well-being. So if you think candida could be a driver of your sugar cravings, then working with a GP and a naturopath to diagnose and address it is important. We've got targeted antifungal herbs and probiotics and lots of dietary and supplemental support for the whole microbiome to help reduce that opportunity for candida to overgrow. If a candida overgrowth is linked to other conditions like small intestinal bacterial overgrowth or SIBO, or even hormonal imbalances, then we can look into all of that as well.
And what are some of the herbs and supplements that you typically prescribe?
There are select nutrients and herbs that are particularly helpful at regulating blood glucose. Inositol is a favorite. And then also magnesium and chromium, which deficiencies of those in particular can contribute to dysregulated blood sugar and sugar cravings. And then there are a few really great herbs as well, like cinnamon and gymnema, that are all excellent for helping to reduce the impact of sugar on our system and ease those cravings for sweetness. And we can also help reduce sugar cravings by reducing histamine production. So the nutrients like quercetin, bromelains, and vitamin C are really helpful for that too.
So speaking of histamine production, is this where positive association technique or PAT can be beneficial as well?
Yes, absolutely. So PAT retrains the system by utilizing naturopathy, kinesiology, and acupressure to work on both the major nerve bundles either side of the spine and major acupuncture points. So this activates both the acupuncture meridian system and the nervous system to reduce the defensive state and allow for a less reactive response to the substance being treated. Recalibrating, desensitizing the body to create a positive association with the allergen instead of an overreactive one. So a PAT sugar treatment can help reduce cravings for sugar and improve the body's response to sugar. PAT can also help address the impacts of yeasts by reducing sensitivities to yeast in the body like candida.
So if you'd like to learn more about positive association technique or PAT and see if it is right for you, you can visit our website, naturalallergytreatment.com.au, for more information and bookings for all our clinic locations around Australia and New Zealand. And for more information about a naturopathic consultation with Lila, you can visit her website, liladiconzio.com. So thank you for joining me today, Lila. It's been really interesting to learn about the biological drivers of sugar cravings. And thank you for sharing your tips with our listeners, as I'm sure they'll get a lot out of it. Do you have any final thoughts that you'd like to share?
Yeah, sure. So I guess just a lot of talk about sugar cravings, but let's just remember that craving and consuming sugar doesn't make you a bad person. And all those delicious desserts should definitely be able to be enjoyed in moderation and without guilt, because life is about having fun after all. Thanks for having me, Jess.
I agree. So thanks to our listeners, and be sure to subscribe to our channel as we have lots of interesting pieces in the works for this year as well.